afternoon. Today is Wednesday, March 19th, 78th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, longtime CAO, not a regular visitor to this show, however, Phil Smith Haynes. Hey, guy.
Hey. Sounds a little weird to be referred to as the longtime CAO.
Yeah, well, you know, when did Loretta leave?
2009, so it's been a little over 4 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you probably got the room decorated the way that you wanted it.
I'm actually on my third room since she left.
Oh, really?
I keep moving offices.
See.
Yeah, trying to find someplace more comfortable.
Same contract, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This afternoon, we're talking about the budget. This is kind of Phil's respite from number crunching. And we'll also talk about some of the state and their shenanigans and some of those impacts to the budget. We'll do that when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Phil Smith Haynes. But before we do, we go to our 1,000 greatest, smartest, bestest quotes that we can find. In your honor, sir.
Oh,
of course,
thank
and
you.
A lot of other people also notice it's been used a little bit. All right. We've got a John Updike as an option. And we've got Sam Walton as a quote. Your choice.
Well, Updike was the first one you pulled. Let's hear that one.
No guts, no glory. We'll go with it. Quote, any activity becomes creative when the doer cares about doing it right or better.
You know what? That's an excellent
like
quote.
That yeah.
ties directly into the budget. So you know what? I can play with that one a little bit.
Okay. I'll just mark this here so you can see the Walton quote. It actually wasn't bad. You wouldn't have been uncomfortable with it.
Okay.
I just do that during the break. You can see that one. When you guys are working on the budget and you're doing the grinding and the groaning and the oh my's and the why's and how comes, how much of that is driven by federal shenanigans and how much is driven by state shenanigans?
Actually, very little of it is driven by federal shenanigans in terms of what we deal with, because mostly, well, the county administers a lot of federally funded programs. We pretty much pass those through. So if Fed money goes up or down, the local program goes up or down accordingly. State shenanigans.
Novel concept, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
State shenanigans tend to have a little bit more of an impact on us because for a lot of programs, it's the same thing where, you know, we're just administering something on behalf of the state. But they tend to like to, you know, change the rules of the game from time to time, and that can really have an impact not only on the state programs that we're administering on their behalf, but also on our local programs and responsibilities. I think you wanted to talk a little bit about public safety at
well,
some
we'll
point in the conversation,
of,
and that's a great example of the kind of thing where the rules of the game changed a couple years ago.
What about this IOU thing that they, they pulled it with the educational system. So I would presume that the counties also have this, in lieu of, and we'll do the dance and dance and dance, and we'll just credit your account in the Bank of California. Not, well, I guess the Bank of California doesn't exist anymore, does it? So it could be UCB. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a number of IOUs. The state, you know, the voters of California several years ago decided that unfunded mandates on counties and cities were a bad thing. And so they told the state, don't do that anymore. And the state is now required to fund things that are determined to be mandates on local government. But the voters didn't actually say you're required to pay those bills. And so what happens as a consequence is that we get exactly that. We get deferred payments, and we have claims going back to, 2000, 2001 that the state has not quite gotten around to cutting that check for yet.
Spectre of payments.
Yes.
So when you hear some of the goofy things coming out of Sacramento. Oh, we've got a $16 billion surplus. Oh, we've got... now, if it was me, now, of course, I probably wouldn't be in your chair for three offices' length of time with this attitude, but I'd light somebody up. I would go ballistic and say, how can you say that you have a surplus when you're not honoring and paying your bills for ours and the other 57 counties over the last 10 to 15 years? How dare you even think of making that claim?
Well, we have pointed that out as politely as we can. The counties have a interesting relationship with the state, and so, you know, you want to make sure that they understand your position without making them mad at you, so they could always do something worse in the future.
Yeah, there's always that fear, isn't there? Oh, boy. So do you work through your representative entities? Yeah, the CSAC and that kind of group, rather than you getting on the phone and saying, I want to talk to Wes or whoever the state senator is at the time or the governor or the finance office?
Yeah, I don't have the governor's direct number. So
you haven't been in the office long enough.
I'm not that old of a CAO. No, we typically work through our representatives. We have the California State Association of Counties, and now we're members of what's called the Rural County Representatives of California. And then we also have a lobbying firm that we employ that represents specific Humboldt County interests as distinguished from general 58 County interests. And so we typically work through one of those three, and then we will supplement with what they do with a letter of our own.
Supplement. Okay. KINS, News and Information, Times 319.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Phil Smith-Haynes, a voice you're going to come to know and love here on the show more regularly than in the past. Because you got two of the five running for office, you're going to have to do your turn.
Absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you have a couple more smiles. Who knows, you might even really like looking forward to it. So, Phil, you've got the state, which oftentimes serves as a filter for some of the federal monies. At a slight cost, I'm sure, to us all.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, a little bit.
That was a pregnant pause for dramatic effect. Yeah, yeah, okay. Thanks for filling in, though. And this concept of the mandated programs that have been shifted to the counties, whether it's general relief or some of the elements of that, or mental health and some of the elements of that, or some of the other challenges that are out there, and knowing that you've got the representative groups, but right now, you got Chesbro, who was a supervisor, who has been our representative in a various incantations over the years. I'm stunned that he's not more sensitive, or that he's calling you and Del Norte and Mendocino and Sonoma and say, guys, what does this do to you? Okay, and then take that with the concern from a county perspective and throw that at the state rather than coming from the state and pushing it down into the counties like everybody else tends to.
Well, of course, we have a wonderful relationship with Assemblymember Chesbro that we value very deeply. But what I will say is that his fiduciary responsibility is no longer to the county of Humboldt. It's now to the state of California. And it's one of those where you stand depends on where you sit kind of things. Because with him being in the legislature, he's got a responsibility for the entire state and for making sure that their budget is balanced. And he certainly understands our perspective, having, you know, sort of grown up from this organization. But this is no longer his primary responsibility in life. And so we have to work with him and help him understand, you know, the local impacts in a different way.
So taking that same line of logic, we don't have district supervisors. We only have a supervisor for the county.
So the five supervisors are collectively responsible for the welfare of the entire county. Each of them individually represent the people of one particular district, but they don't get to make decisions about things that occur in their district solo. So, you know, if three people want something to occur in McKinleyville, it's going to occur in McKinleyville, whether the fifth district supervisor votes for it or not. That's the nature of the way things are run. So,
didn't hear taps on your shoes when you came in, but you did a pretty good job with that.
Thank you. I tried.
Step at a time. So as you look at the state and what they're coming down and getting back to our basic with the budget, okay, how do you allow for the, in the middle of May, the tail end of June? Oh, by the way, we're going to realign this thing called the criminal justice system. Don't worry about it. It'll be neutral to you. Wham.
Yeah. Those are always the exciting challenges, shall we say, in
you really are life. Warped, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
But no, in that particular instance, it did come with money. Now, it didn't come with all the money the state was spending. And it didn't come with all the money we actually need, but it came with some money, which, you know, from my perspective is like most of the time responsibilities don't come with money.
They just shift it entirely.
Yeah. And so, and it also came with a process, you know, there's this community corrections partnership and have all these stakeholders involved and this plan that goes to the Board of Supervisors.
More
and
meetings.
So forth. There are, yes. but what that has allowed is that has allowed the various counties to develop individual plans. And the theory is that we can address criminality better here on the ground where it starts than they can, you know, legislating from Sacramento and locking people up in Alturas or Coalinga or
conceptually,
wherever.
I think everybody can agree with that, mm-hmm. except because of the various degrees of bad guys
Right.
You couldn't expect an Alturas other than the big, or Modoc or some of these small guys, or Del Norte County in their small little jails to be able to house a serial killer.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that, you know, the population has really changed in our local jails, and that's one of our big challenges.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Phil Smith-Haynes, CAO for the County of Humboldt. The budget process.
Yes.
Now, I can remember former Sheriff Gary Phelps indicating that there were only two or three departments. Go ahead, you can relax. It's okay. The tension. What's he going to say about a past department head? He was one of the few that did zero-based budgeting and started from zero every year instead of the rollover references to, okay, it's a 2% cut. Well, it's still a $350 million budget. Give me a break. You know, those references.
Right.
Do you try to get your appointed department heads to come in with that approach and say, okay, guys, etch a sketch, build out, and let's see where we are, and do not use this past year or the current fiscal year as a reference, because things have changed at the feds, things have changed at the state, things have changed at the county. Just because it is what you had, don't bother, don't whine, don't moan, put in what you need, and let's build off of that.
We haven't quite gone to that extent. I do try and reinforce to all the department heads, our appointeds and our friends who are elected, that we need to be cognizant of the fact that the world has changed. We've had a number of conversations with department heads this year in particular about the changes that have occurred because of the economy and just particularly our pension system. I mean, one of the biggest costs that's driving everything right now is increases from PERS. And so we're trying to make sure that folks are cognizant of those as they're developing budgets and that they do take a look at more creative solutions than they might have in the past.
Phil, is it the changes in the PERS system, or is it the accumulation over the years of younger people retiring, and instead of it being a 10-year retirement plan till death do us part, it's turned into a 30 or a 35 or a 40 with these escalators built in to cover, like, for medical insurance and this and that. And it's just, I mean, I've seen some numbers, and I don't think it's county level, but that of personnel cost, over 50% is being applied to retired, not to current, but retired folks through these various guarantees that were whipped out in the 60s, 70s, and 80s when things were kind of fat and sassy.
Yeah, and even the 90s, actually. So, you know, we're not quite that bad, but we certainly are facing a challenge here at the local level around making good on past guarantees. And California is one of a handful of states that have what's called the California rule on pensions, and you actually can't meaningfully affect people's benefit going forward if they have a reasonable expectation of what it's going to be. And there's, of course, been some initiatives that have sought to change that. I believe they're not going forward for November's ballot at this point. But there have been three recent rule changes by the PERS board, though, that have been pretty significant in terms of the costs that we're facing over the next couple of years. One of those is that they've decreased their long-term projection of interest rate, what they believe they're going to earn on their investments. They've dropped that by a quarter of a percent, and so somebody has to make that up.
Would that be county?
That would be the county, yes. That would, we are the somebody. We are somebody. Yeah. yes, and the second big change that they've made is a recognition of exactly what you were talking about, the fact that retirees live longer, so they've increased their actuarial age projection by 1 year. They probably need to increase it by more, but they've done that by 1 year. And then the third thing that they've done is changed the number of years that we have to pay back when there's a dip in the market, shortened the number of years over which we get to pay back those market dips. And so the combination of decreasing the assumed interest, decreasing the number of years we have to make up for market shortfalls, and increasing the expected longevity of folks means that we're seeing quite an increase in the amount that we have to pay out each year. So
what I'm hearing you say is hammer, hammer, hammer. And all three hammers are
hitting the same nail. Yeah.
Yeah. Wacky County instead of whack-a-mole.
Exactly. And cities, our friends in the cities are not immune from this as well. So
how do some of these more rural, since we're kind of in the middle of the road in our ruralness, how do these small little dinkerdoos have a chance? Or do they just shut her down and say, fine, you know, merge us, consolidate, Jefferson, whatever, we're done?
You know, that's a great question. I'm thankful to be in the middle of the road in our ruralness, because I think about our friends in Del Norte and Trinity and Modoc and some of these places and how they are going to hang on in the next few years. You know, one of the things that we've been talking about, particularly with the folks over in Trinity, is around shared services between their county and our county, because, you know, we can get a little extra revenue. They can get a service that they couldn't afford to provide on their own. And so
basically, sheriff and things like that, or are you talking more administrative or departments we don't see on the street services?
We haven't gone to sheriff level services yet, but we're providing fiscal support for their child support now. We're doing some of their ag inspections, and both under agreements. And so those are the kinds of things, the sort of not just purely administrative things, but not, you know, frontline law enforcement either. So
any thoughts that this may end up driving either annexation or put a hyphen, be Humboldt hyphen Trinity County, and we go and we have a couple more supervisors and life continues?
You know, that's I don't want to come across like I'm, you know, trying to take over Trinity County, right? I have great relationships with the folks over there. But, you know, I think at some point folks probably in Sacramento are going to have to take a hard look at the continued viability of some of our jurisdictions. I mean, we've had not only the rural counties, but we've had some urban cities that have faced literal bankruptcy over the last few years. And so, you know, the question really becomes, does California have a sustainable number of local governments? And, you know, that's...
You may put in a couple extra words there. California's sustainability ? Too. I mean, as some of these things go on, I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to get less expensive. and it doesn't appear like the revenues are going to match these increasing costs. Well, I guess the current phrase is tipping point. Fine, or whatever you want to call it. And it just seems like there's just too much. So I would think consolidation would be a natural. If that was to occur, does the state have to do that? Or is this like annexation where Trinity County votes, Humboldt County votes, and we agree to this structural model and implement over a five-year window or something?
Yeah, county boundaries are defined in state law. So I think you'd need state legislation to actually merge two counties. You know, it did happen once upon a time. There used to be a Klamath County that's right. Now part of Humboldt County back in the 1870s. So it's possible. I think what's far more likely, though, is the kinds of things that I was describing earlier, where the jurisdictions continue to exist, but only one out of three jurisdictions is providing an actual service, and two others are contracting.
So kind of like an MOU, to use your jargon.
Yeah, I think, you know, in Los Angeles County, they've had a number of cities from back at the World War II era that they refer to as contract cities. They actually have a contract cities association, and they basically are just sort of a shell of a jurisdiction, and they contract out for water, sewer, police, fire, all the things that you would typically think of as a city providing.
But you can claim that you live in that city.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:45. We'll be back with more from Phil Smith Haynes.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions, 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:48, final segment of the afternoon with Phil Smith Haynes from the county. Phil, doing your budget stuff, I know there's an awful lot of momentum and inertia and discussion about legalization of marijuana. Okay, so let's play the scenario. It gets legalized, and it is sales tax driven. Okay, you do that versus the cost of having the culture in the area. Does the county come out neutral? If this does happen, and of course the petition process will expire by the time you guys do your budget, are you going to say, well, status quo? Or, hey, if this plays out, guys, we don't have to worry because, and here's the possible scenario. How do you put something that would be significant like that into the equation of budget development?
Yeah. Marijuana legalization is just a fascinating topic all around. I would never say don't worry. That's just kind of the nature of my job, right? I'm supposed to be the one who worries. But the thing that I think you would have to really take a hard look at is how those sales would go. If marijuana were legalized, you might have more local sales of it, but you would also be doing a lot more selling, officially selling, to the large urban centers, right? And so you'd be looking at basically a wholesale versus a retail model and having to do some analysis of that and how much sales tax you would generate on a wholesale basis and whether that would be sufficient. And then, of course, you know, the county only receives sales tax on sales that are sited in the unincorporated area. So if you were, you know, had your marijuana distribution warehouse in the city of Eureka as opposed to out in Myrtletown or McKinleyville, that would make a difference. So it's just a fascinating question.
You're saying
there's so many unanswered questions around marijuana legalization.
So if we had the distribution around the bay, then that could tie into the train. Is that what you're indicating? I notice you're dancing around in Southern Humboldt here, Kemosabe.
Well, Southern Humboldt is all unincorporated, so that's, yeah, the sales tax down there, we're pretty solid.
Thanks for coming by.
Always a pleasure.
He says that now. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hugs when you'll see you tomorrow.